Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. I've got a proposition, a question to ask you. Say I wasn't a doctor. Say I said, here's a vial of a vaccine. It won't submission of a sickness and it won't stop infection. Would you take it? Of course you wouldn't. And yet, half the world did. Today, we hear that a polio outbreak in the United States was caused by a polio vaccine. Yesterday on this program, speaking to Dr. Judy Wileyman, I asked her, if polio vaccines used mRNA technology and didn't stop transmission or infection, would they use it? Of course you wouldn't. And yet the COVID vaccine does exactly that. And today, not 24 hours later, a polio case emerges out of the United States after someone took, apparently, a diluted oral vaccine. That's not the end of what's going on with polio vaccines when you've only got to look at the Gates Foundation's efforts out of India. It's unbelievable when you see how badly they perform. But because they are all-knowing and all-powerful, they can seemingly do whatever they want. One of the great things about all of this is that you realize that real people will eventually stand up. And this is the way that we get this to conclude. The beautiful part is that there are already many people doing exactly this. And my guest for this hour, who I'll introduce in just a couple of minutes' time, Jana Pitkanen, is one of these great Australians who will fight the system, even after being a nurse for more than 30 years, says, nope, not doing it anymore. If everyone in the medical profession went on strike tomorrow, all of this would end by Monday. Imagine that. So we're going to get a taste in a moment from real Australian heroes who I guarantee Jana's going to say, not me, I'm not a hero. But yet when you listen to her work and her conviction, I'm pretty sure you'll agree that she obviously is and that we all need to be a bit more like her. I look around at the headlines today and I'm shocked that we seem to have a simultaneous idea that we all want to go back into lockdown around the world. Headlines that read, vaccines, are they still contributing to the greater good? Well, that's obvious. That clearly must have come from Dr. Joe Mercola. He knows what he's talking about. And yet, on the other side of the world, we've got headlines that read, face masks should be worn to avoid COVID lockdown, warns expert. And that's come out of Wales. They're telling us that in Wales, face masks should be worn again in the UK to avoid another lockdown. What I don't understand is, what are we locking down for? If you're going to get the virus, you're going to get the virus, and there's no point avoiding it with a mask because you're going to get it the moment you take it off, aren't you? So you're going to be stuck with it for the rest of all eternity. If you're vaccinated 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 times and it's still not working for you and you've still got anxiety, then you might want to look at alternatives. You know, perhaps boosting your immune system, perhaps eating better nutrition, perhaps not drinking dirty water, perhaps not eating sugar. I mean, just obvious things. It's like, when did we decide that the government makes all our decisions for us? And when did we decide to put the government's name on our birth certificates as our parents? Because I'm pretty sure last time I looked, it had my parents' names there and not the Prime Minister's and the Deputy Prime Minister. It leaves you scratching your head. It beggars belief that this is what's going on. And we get another headline today from the US. Can the US government let COVID go? Apparently in LA County, they're bringing back an indoor mask mandate. Goodness me. We just can't seem to stop it. And we keep letting these politicians, bureaucrats, global world leaders tell us what to do. But the more you smell the clean air and the more you drink the clean water, you realize that we are one day closer to ending it all in terms of the globalist takeover of the planet will not happen. That's how confident I am after this week. I ask people on my show if they're more or less pessimistic or optimistic, and the general consensus this week has been optimistic. And I'm going to ask that question of our guest very, very soon. So are you listening and enjoying TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk. That's TNT Radio.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversations.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jana Pitkanen has been in the nursing industry for 32 years, the last 16 as a registered nurse with a wide variety of experience in general medicine and chronic disease, I should say, being alarmed when APRA threatened all of the health staff in March 2021 to not veer from government narrative and large volumes of vaccine injury that began to present from April onwards. She stood down in September and in November resigned and have since surrendered her registration to APRA as it is not worth her money. This is my kind of Australian. Welcome to the show, putting your money where your mouth is and saying it as it is. Thank you, Jana, for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Jason.
Now, do you wake up in the morning and think, we're going to win this one? Or do you think, I've got another battle on here and I feel like World War One and World War Two are nothing compared to what we're up against at the moment? How do you feel on a daily basis, or is it shifting?
It shifts really widely. So some days I wake up and I'm thinking, yep, we've got this, we're nearly there. And then other days, like today, I've just had a really bad day. A friend of mine's been suspended by APRA and is in the battle for her life, and just, you know, and then I'm, you know, seeing all these people in the supermarkets with their masks on, and it just feels like we're on a slippery slope back down to that COVID mania in 2020.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? Because we've been so brutally harassed, attacked, and had our whole lives turned upside down, it's very easy that when you see a couple of people in the supermarket with masks on, and it makes my blood boil instantly. And if my wife's around me, I can't help but make an under the breath comment about, oh my God, you know, if you've got a mask on today, you're guaranteed you've had four jabs, and you're still worried about this thing. And 35% of Australia's populations had the virus. It's not like you now don't know anyone. I mean, 2 years ago, after 20,000 cases and 8 months of lockdowns, most people said, I've never heard of anyone having it. I've never heard of anyone dying from it. But I've noticed that 99%, if I look at the stats, aren't dying from it. But now everyone knows everyone has had it. I mean, it's affected everyone. More than one in three people. You have to know multiple people who have had it. And you must therefore ask questions. What was it like? What were the symptoms? How long did it take? But people aren't even having these types of conversations. What you're still seeing is, oh, that silly argument that I've been triple jabbed and I've been so sick. I've never been so sick in all my life. And if I didn't take the vaccine, it would have been worse. I can't understand how people can still conclude this. It's so obvious that that is not the case at all.
I think it's really sad. I mean, it's just a good example of how our population is brainwashed, absolutely brainwashed by mainstream media. You know, people have all become experts on PCR tests and RAT tests, and the minute they have a sniffle, they'll run on and do a RAT test. And it's like, why? Why are you doing all of this? You know, these are the very same people that would have presented to a hospital ward 3 years ago with an infectious stomach disease, vomiting everywhere, and would have been offended if we had told them to leave the premises. And yet now they're just, you know, oh no, I better test. I might have something terribly wrong with me. It's just absolute lunacy. I'm glad I have actually donated my 10 shots to the general public. So, you know, they can knock themselves out with that going to the highest bidder. But it's just, it's really sad state of affairs to see these people scurrying around so scared.
It's very, very upsetting to think that Australia, we used to pretend that we were resilient, and we were very good in a crisis to help out our community. But that one beautiful skill that we seem to have has been lost in all of this, because you have to now ask for a health status of somebody before you can even take their help. This idea that the SES wouldn't allow people to bag sand in floods because they weren't double jabbed is a prime example of the decline in Australia's mateship code. It's now evaporated, and I hate to say it, but more and more I feel like that there is a split in the Australian culture that's led across the planet, even that we're all seeing it, is that we seem to have a split in the human species. There's those that want to be self-sufficient and take control of their own lives and remain adults, and there's the others that just want to defer all responsibility back towards the state, to the government, and say, too hard, you control it, just let me go out and eat and see my friends, and I'll take as many needles in my arm as you can possibly give me to in order to do that. And that does not compute with me as how you can be a self-sufficient adult in the 21st century. I cannot make head or tail of that. What do you think? Are you seeing something similar? Is that how it works?
Yeah, well, I noticed immediately in March 2020 when they started speaking, you know, telling people to stay home, and they made that really clear division in our society, which had never really existed until then. You know, you had the non-essential workers and the essential workers, and, you know, we were the lucky buggers that could toddle off to work and sort of carry on a normal life. And if you didn't fall into being a teacher or a nurse or a doctor or something that's essential, you had to stay home and you were isolated. So it started that division already back then. All of my elderly patients said that they felt that they were ostracized for the first time in their lives. And really, you know, every day on the media, you know, they were told that if you're over 65, you shouldn't be going out to the shops and you should stay home and, you know, don't come to hospital because we won't treat you. And to then, you know, what's happening in nursing homes now where the elderly are actually being kept prisoners in their rooms if there's one COVID case in the nursing home. But no one bats an eyelid because everyone's become used to having this divided society. And it's an us and them. And I would never have believed that we would come to this when in every other scenario, we're supposedly so free and tolerant. And one puny little disease has completely divided our nation and the world.
It beggars belief, absolutely. Sadly for me, my mum passed away about 7 years ago. She was only in her mid-60s and had got a horrible a heart cancer that turns out one of the triggers was a live flu vaccine. It was written in this study that we'd found, and only 300 people in all of history had ever caught this particular cancer. But Mum was an infectious disease nurse's specialist. She was obsessed with the vaccine process, but I just know that this was the line in the sand that I would have said to Mum, you've got to retire. She'd still probably be working today at 75 if she was around, trying to do all she can, because this is the culture of a nurse. This is the culture of the industry. You know, you work around the clock, you do all the hours, you're cleaning up, you know, as she would explain to me, you know, the vomit and the messes and the rah, rah, rah and all this type of stuff. It takes a superhuman to even want to be a nurse. And yet with all of this stuff, and so preventative medicine was obviously the best way forward. And yet this would have had to have been a line in the sand. I believe in Mum's case, she would have gone, I think it's time to retire here. Because the other side of that argument about protecting the elderly is, where was the argument from people, at least in their 80s, that have reached life expectancy to say, you know what? It is my life. I've got this far on my own. But quite frankly, I'm quite okay here. I don't need to take your medicine. Mm. We never really saw that argument. And I found that quite upsetting that people had lost their sense of autonomy in all of this. And this other thing that everyone, even in their 80s and even with their comorbidities and even with their unhealthiness, all felt that they were still invincible. This was a real anomaly for me. How can you be in your 80s, be, you know, having all these other doctor's appointments and not thinking that you're going to be vulnerable to COVID? If it's going to get me, it's going to get me. Something's got to get me. I'm 83, if that makes sense. Where did it all get mixed up?
I think it was just, if you think about it, the whole thing was orchestrated in such a clever way. You know, you socially isolate everybody, you stick them in their homes. I know the elderly couldn't go out, you know, if they relied on services, they weren't taken out shopping, they couldn't go on social outings. So they were completely alone. And all they had to do was watch TV. And every single day, you know, on the hour, the premier and the CHO of the state would get on and talk about how terrible this disease was. And, you know, if you're in your own little house with no friends and you're socially isolated, pretty soon you are going to go, you know, you're just going to believe what you're told and you're going to fall for it. And that's exactly what's happened. I mean, I do know that there were a lot of elderly people that haven't caved in and haven't had the vaccine. I've met some at the rallies, and I even know that at the nursing home, some of them have refused. I had a 92-year-old lady who said, you know, I survived Hitler as a child, and I'll survive this as well. I'm not worried, and if I die, I die. You know, I'm quite happy to go. So there are the few and far between, but I think it was just that whole harsh lockdowns in 2020 and 21 that really just brought particularly the elderly who rely on other people to their knees.
Yes. And because of the isolation, obviously you had to become dependent on something, and it was that that screen in the corner of the room that was the source for most people. And, of course, it was the default source, and yet it led many others onto a different screen, and that being, you know, the social media, of course, and that was the other side of it where people became networked. So there was two approaches in that, and it's really interesting, a form of discussion there. And given that you have seen both sides of this, there'll be a lot more we can talk about when we return from the break, but we are going to take that now. You are listening to TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Misty Winston.
Here live at Freedom Fest 2022 at the Mirage in Las Vegas. It is day four, final day, and we are just wrapping up and having a few more interviews with some really interesting people. We're joined right now by Michael Pack, who's the author of Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in His Own Words. And it's there's the book, but there's also a documentary film. I knew a bit about Clarence Thomas, but not a lot. So it's a really interesting perspective. And I think what's so fascinating about this is Michael made the very deliberate decision just make it, Clarence Thomas giving you his story. So it is just him facing a camera in the film and answering questions. The longest interview that he's given, 24 hours over 4 months, really diving in deep to his history, his past, his evolution. So it's a really, regardless of your opinion on Clarence Thomas, I think it's a really fascinating perspective to hear from him. He's really kind of notoriously private.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Remember when they told us that the last presidential election was the most secure election in history?
Well, they lied to you and the rest of the world. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. As we learn that the United States president has declared that he has COVID, I believe for the second time, there are many people out there breathing a sigh of relief as he has lost his sense of smell. It's got to be a good thing when Joe Biden is around, but that's not just the only joke you're going to hear on this show. There's going to be plenty more. They said, yell, follow the science. So I didn't discover there are only two genders and only women can get pregnant. I found that meme on Mark Latham's page, everyone. That wasn't me. Jana, we have to laugh. We have to keep our sense of humor in all of this because it's just so preposterous that the man who has now told the world two things today, that he has COVID and that he has cancer, and yet his staff came out and said, no, that was a skin cancer from 18 months ago. This is Joe Biden. This is what we're hearing. And we are completely being brainwashed in all of this, aren't we? And it's not just the general public, it's the medical profession as well.
Yeah, that's right. I think back in January, you know, February 2020, I think there was a healthy kind of show of skepticism in the hospitals and amongst all staff, you know, we'd be talking about COVID, and particularly as it rolled on and we had no cases and we had empty hospital beds and, you know, staff laid off and told to have holidays and all of that stuff. There was a lot of skepticism around. And I think the thing that really did it for me was when they started making us wear masks indoors. And we all know as health professionals, I worked in infectious diseases as well, we all know that those masks don't work for a virus. They just don't work. And I remember so many people were up in arms and saying, I'm not going to wear the mask. It doesn't work. What am I wearing it for? And besides which, it should be changed every 20 minutes. And here, you know, Queensland Health was telling us we can wear them for 4 hours. And the total unrelenting pressure from hierarchy for us to wear those masks, I think that wore everybody down. And so people just stopped questioning it and wore the masks, you know, because they didn't want to be reprimanded. And that was the beginning and the turning point, I think, for everyone, because they just accepted it. They were like, oh, well, this is obviously not going to go away. I just have to do as I'm told. And, you know, they waited that 6-7 months before then they started rolling out the vaccine. But it, and the other thing that also happened was that Queensland Health actually told us that we weren't allowed to look for information about COVID on any other website other than government-approved websites. So that happened in February 2020, and I immediately, of course, went to have a look elsewhere, as I'm sure a lot of other people did as well. And so, you know, if you're a really busy junior doctor, you're working flat out, you know, 16, 18 hours, grueling workload, you are being spoon-fed by the government, you are just going to believe what they're saying. You don't have time or the energy to go and have a look elsewhere. And then I think for the higher up, you know, the big fat cats in the system, I'm sure that they were getting little bonuses and things like that to keep them quiet. So, you know, you have the ones that are aware of what's going on, but are choosing to just stay silent because it's for their benefit. And then you have the young guns that really are just, they actually think that we're in the midst of a terrible pandemic.
It's such an interesting point that when you look at or you take a cross-section of people in a profession like you're in, and as you've described in terms of the hierarchy and the fat cats versus the junior doctors, and what you see is something that I found not in the medical profession but very similar in society, that the youngies, the 20s and the early 30s that are making their corporate inroads, as it were, and are getting to those six-figure salaries quite young in their careers, you know, the ones that are sort of leading out, they were the most compliant in all of this because they had the most to lose in all of this. And yet there were people who were, you know, mid-40s and upwards, mid-40s to probably mid-60s was the real engine room of the resistance, given that these were the people that have served for most of their working lives, have worked extended careers, and certainly not all of them had been promoted to anything great, just good old hardworking people, but had done a lot of things in their lives. This was the resistance. So this is who we were sort of up against in all of it. Now, it's not exclusive to these age groups, but it does show you, and you've kind of reinforced that anecdotally, that, you know, the young doctors too busy you know, worried about. No, let's just get on with it and perpetuate this this fraud. And it's not like we haven't seen it, you know, in the home. Because we've seen, you know, increased levels of divorces and separation, obviously. And this is something that I think that all of us have seen in our own lives is that, you know, we've known so many people, wow, they broke up. How did that happen? And then I'd hear another one and another one. It was quite a cluster. And it all started happening after that second lockdown here in Australia, sort of June of last year up to Christmas. And my wife would come home and she, you wouldn't believe it, so-and-so broke up. I'm like, wow, another, you know, relationship been together 15, 18, 20 years that would never, ever have predicted. And yet this was going on. So clearly there's something going on in the background here that, I mean, you break up in a lockdown, where are you going to go? That's the first stage. You're going to go and sit in another room by yourself as opposed to with your partner of however many years. So none of it's making any sense to us. And it's kind of like we've got to work out, is there another way of approaching this? Or another way of doing it. And this is something that you did because you basically said, I can't operate in this space anymore. And you've made a big move to give up a career that was 30 years. This is a big deal. And whilst the news update has just sort of creeped up on upon us, I want to be able to talk to you a bit more about that because that's a huge move that is not just limited to you, but it shows that people have to be able to make decisions for themselves again, and we can't rely on anyone else to live our lives for us. Don't go anywhere. News headlines, you're on TNT Radio.
Matt Boyland here with a quick check of the day's headlines. Vaccinations and booster shots are now being offered to people in New York State, but it's not for COVID, it's for polio. Turkey has announced Russia and Ukraine will sign a deal on Friday, which will see grain holed up in Ukraine released and exported through the Black Sea. And the military has taken back the presidential offices in Sri Lanka and raided the anti-government protest camp after the country's former prime minister was sworn in as president.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. And it's a really interesting way to reflect upon the way that you live your life in this lockdown planet to be able to speak to people from all walks of life and determine how it is that they are coping in what they're doing. And the last thing you ever think about is people leaving a career, resigning from a job. It seems like the absolute opposite of what you would do. But Jana, this is exactly what you did in a health profession in a time of the greatest medical catastrophe in history, and yet you walk the other way. What were the points that led up to go, I just can't do this anymore?
I think for me, the point was once they started vaccinating patients and knowing that, you know, I've always been very proud of being a nurse, and I've always practiced according to the code of conduct and the code of ethics. And, you know, the code of conduct has a large section in there about informed consent, and not a single person in Australia actually gave informed consent for these vaccines because not a single one of them was aware of the absolute carnage that these vaccines had already caused in America, the UK, and Europe. And none of my colleagues were either. Like, I would talk to them about it and say, wow, like, you know, there's been a couple thousand deaths in the UK from the vaccines. Are you guys aware of it? And no one had even bothered to look into it. And I saw my colleagues getting injured once they had the vaccines. And then, you know, I gave up talking to them. But then seeing the patients, I think that just, I'd come home of a night and just think, I can't go back. I can't watch this. I felt like I was watching you know, something similar to what happened in Germany in the Second World War. It really was that bad. These people taking these vaccines just so they could go shopping or, you know, go to their social groups or, you know, for whatever reason, just because the premier has gotten up and told them that they have to get vaccinated. None of them have been warned, and now they're in hospital and they're having strokes and heart attacks, confusion, inability to walk. You name it, I saw it, you know, intracranial hemorrhages, strokes. It was just horrific. And at first there was sort of not an acknowledgement that it was a vaccine, but at least the fact that the patients had been vaccinated was mentioned on entry into the hospital system. And in about July, it seems that it just fell off the record completely and no one was even asking them. Yet the presentations were all so similar, and, you know, and there were things that we didn't see in bulk. You know, you get your, you know, usual things that come in, and there's seasonal variants and all of that stuff. But what we were seeing just made no sense. And everyone was just willing to brush it under the carpet. People got nervous if you talked about it, you know. And I was reminded by a colleague that, you know, APRA's statement in March, you know, that, you know, you may get dobbed in if you keep talking like this. And I got told to be, you know, stop being ridiculous and stop imagining things. And yeah, it just really broke my heart seeing all these patients, you know, and they were so unwell, and their admissions, you know, they weren't quick ones at that stage. They were in for weeks on end because they couldn't walk and they had to be rehabbed, and, you know, and that was the older population. And then the younger ones started coming in, you know, and what do you tell a 52-year-old who's taken the jab so he can keep working, and he has an intracranial hemorrhages and it ends up in bed dependent on someone for everything? It was just crazy. And this willingness to turn a blind eye, like, I just kept thinking, like, these can't be my colleagues, you know. These doctors have always, you know, gone to bat for their patients, and now they're just, no one's questioning anything. And I just thought, you know what, I don't want to be a part of a system like this where my income means more than my neighbor's health, you know. And and so that's when the mandate came in, I just said, well, I have no intention of ever taking the vaccine. And there were no exemptions being handed out. So, yeah, I stood down. And, you know, it's something that I wake up every morning and I'm still in quite disbelief, because I was going to work like Florence Nightingale till at least 75. So I can't believe that I'm no longer in the profession that I absolutely loved. But, you know, I can't be a part of it. I just can't.
It's all you can do at any stage is when it becomes too difficult to back up and play within a system that no longer works for you to be expected to do that. And so it's it is heroic, if nothing else. But when you look at it from your principled decision, I'm not doing it, and that's it. It's no different to working for any organization, employer, whoever, that just no longer resonates. You simply can't. Do you think that privately some of your colleagues have perhaps said, yeah, maybe Jana was right here, but I've still got to keep my job? Do you think that there's a transition, a movement across, or are they still in total denial at this point?
My colleagues, you know, they're all around my age, so we've been around and we've seen a lot of things. And I think it does resonate with quite a few of them, but unfortunately they have mortgages and they need to keep working. And they do still seem to think that, you know, I just heard that one of my colleagues just told me that she started wearing her mask in the supermarkets again. So, you know, there are the lost causes, but there are the others that don't say anything because they don't want to be dobbed into APRA. And then, yeah, I think that they do quietly know that it was the right thing to do. And that's the other thing, is that fear of APRA, it's almost like it's a supernatural fear. People are so afraid of APRA. It's just an organization. You know, they can't kill you. They're not going to come after you with guns and shoot your family in front of you. You know, they're just a so-called professional body. And people are so terrified that they will get dobbed into APRA, you know. And myself and my colleagues, there's a whole group of us that stood up in, you know, started standing up in October speaking out against it, and we knew that we would all be reported, and everyone has been. I, for some reason, dodged the bullet, but I just resigned anyway. But, you know, it's nothing to be afraid of, you know. Have some integrity and uphold the ethics that you've, you know, you've agreed to abide by, and don't listen, don't worry about what APRA says, you know. I don't understand how people are so afraid of it.
Do you think that there'd be merit if the medical profession was to be able to organise and just go out on strike? Could it work?
Oh, look, you know, and that's the most upsetting thing, is because if everybody had right at the beginning said, we are going to have no part of this, it would have stopped immediately. You know, we would have shut down every single hospital in the country. It wouldn't have worked, you know. And I have no idea what's going on in those back rooms, why everyone's gone along with it. It's just that must be that systematic brainwashing and just the fear of ARPA, which is pretty sad, really. But we could have stopped it, you know. We could have stopped it a long time ago.
The interesting part about the whole ARPRA, A-H-P-R-A, the Australian Health
Something Regulation Regulatory Authority.
Yes. Now, this was not always the only organisation that medical professionals would have to join. In fact, there was a lot of work involved in to consolidate all these other organisations into one. And so just by doing that, signaled that something bigger was coming, because if you had the chiropractors and you had whatever other organizations, the doctors, the nurses, the, you know, whatever, the physiotherapists, all in their separate organizations, this would have been so much more difficult to be able to pull off. But because it was all ARPRA, be careful, be scared. And it just so happened that the Prime Minister's brother was involved in it all, so it was even more convenient. So you start to realise just how obvious this game is played and the leverage that they can get on it all to make you comply. And so it is a big game of bluff, but, geez, they're really good at it, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are. That five-page statement from them in March, like it really does have a lot to answer for, you know. They've basically told every single health professional out there to completely disregard our codes of ethics and conduct, you know. And they've actually caused nurses to assault patients and said it's okay, you know, because if I do a medical treatment on a patient and I don't actually make sure they've got informed consent, I'm assaulting them. So, you know, if you're giving someone a vaccine and you don't tell them that actually, you know, there's all these different risks with it, and, you know, Australia TGA even records over 800 deaths, and, you know, no one's been told any of that stuff. So they haven't actually, they've not known what they're consenting to. So everyone's been coerced and conned and lied to. And every nurse that has jabbed a patient under those conditions has assaulted them.
You know, it's not the first time that I've heard this. I've heard this from individuals who have told me that they've been in a doctor's surgery, and they've turned their head, and the nurse has jabbed them in the arm with a Pfizer COVID vaccine against their will. They specifically said they didn't want it, and the doctor left the room to do something else the patient had asked for, and the nurse has gone bang in the arm. Now, this should be a criminal charge, and sadly the individual involved who told me felt more guilty that she was going to get the doctor in trouble for having a rogue nurse and decided not to report it. This is another level of just how far we have gone here, but it certainly illustrates the psychology behind why many of your colleagues have decided to play along those lines. But anyone who's studied history, anyone who's had anything to see in terms of the Holocaust, that is the line in the sand. This is where some of us just say no, 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 and why we choose to fight back. It's certainly a very, very sad state of affairs that we could even think that this is how the world operates, and yet it does. Cannot be anything like this before, even through. I mean, you probably started after the 80s and the HIV story that went along, but we've certainly seen a million viruses in between. Have you ever seen anything like this in your nursing career?
No. Well, I had never seen the hospitals empty like they were in 2020. that just never happens. All winter it was empty. And just the whole lack of logic and the lack of any kind of scientific evidence, any kind of scientific discussion, that has never happened before. Just the total ignorance of, you know, what different adverse reactions look like. You know, everyone just thought it was, you know, what was it for AstraZeneca? It was the possible clots and then the thrombocytopenia syndrome. And for Pfizer, it was pericarditis. And so no one had looked into any of these other reactions that we were seeing on a daily basis. Just that whole blanket silence. That has never happened before. You know, we've always had robust discussions and there's been lots of stuff to read if you're interested. And now it was just some, you know, looked like some spam feed that Queensland Health put on their website for us to read to tell us that their decisions were okay. I mean, even if you have a look at the disclosure log, you know, of Queensland Health and members of the public have requested information on their different, you know, on SARS-CoV-2 and on masks and everything. And every single one of those is finalized, but there's no documents. So, you know, to me, that seems like, well, they don't actually have any scientific peer-reviewed studies to prove any of this stuff that they're doing.
This is what's heartbreaking about this whole thing, and it keeps coming up. Everyone I speak to, medical profession, doctors, scientists, nurses, are all saying the same thing, that we're being led down a garden path to follow a certain set of rules, and yet there's no hard evidence to any of it, and yet they seem to get away with it. And this is the great confidence trick that's been portrayed up across the planet now, that authority mask as total 100% risk aversion agenda gets away with literally murder because no one is allowed to or dare question anything they say, and they don't even need to present the evidence for their decisions anymore. And so we have this double anomaly here, that everything we do is right and we're not going to show you any of it, and everyone just goes, okay. And that's where we stand. So the ones that resist are the ones that are having to speak up in all of this. Now, we're going to take another break. When we come back, Jana, it's probably – I like to be able to ask the questions such as, if you had your time over, or if you were the Minister for Health, how might you have done this differently? Because it's worthwhile being able to, just from a conversational point of view, many people would be thinking, yeah, that's what we should have done, because at least it provides another way of thinking our way through this and not just having to always think down government lines. So it's just another approach. We'll talk with that after the break. You're on TNT Radio.
We are living in George Orwell's 1984.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
This is New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, stating that the government is the only source of information you can trust.
You can trust us as a source of that information. You can also trust the Director General of Health and the Ministry of Health. For that information, do feel free to visit at any time to clarify any rumour you may hear, covid19.govt.nz. Otherwise, dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth.
That's right. That was the Prime Minister of New Zealand back in 2020, stating something that was right out of 1984. Dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth, unquote. This is why the battle for information and the fight against censorship has never been more urgent during this time of emergency declarations and authoritarianism. No institution or government should be the single source of truth. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Oh, yeah, that's the stuff. Oh, I haven't been through the car wash in ages. My gears are all clogged up and my wheels are as stiff as boards. Oh, and you could do with driving me a little more sensibly. All that revving actually increases CO2 emissions. Changing gears at lower revs can save you money too. And they say us cars don't care about the environment. Honestly, I don't know why I bother. Oh, yes! Oh, just there.
Are you thinking what your car's thinking? Find out how to drive down your emissions and fuel costs by up to £120 a year at tfl.gov.uk.
We need a recalibration of government.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. I'm here with Jana Pitkanen, a nurse of over 30 years' experience who decided to hand back her APRA registration when the system no longer served her ethics rather than the other way around. This is an Australian that all of us should be able to aspire to be people of principled conviction. Jana, one of the big criticisms in all of this is the idea that the church was so silent. this was a real disappointment that there was no alternative to go to in authority or in community leadership. What was your take in all of that?
I was really devastated. I've been a church goer since I was 5 years of age or younger. And I thought that for sure the church is not going to bow down, because if all churches, again, right at the beginning, if all churches had stuck together and said, we're not closing our doors, we're not going to listen to the government's, you know, draconian measures, we'll keep our doors open, I think we would have a very different society now. And I guess it's easy to say in hindsight, you know, we were dealing with an unknown and we didn't know, we were led to believe that it was going to be absolutely devastating upon the population. And so maybe in those first few months, yeah, it made sense. But, you know, once the truth emerged and we became aware that, you know, it wasn't as contagious as they were saying, and it wasn't as horrific as they were saying, certainly the... It's just a real shame that we let the population down by not keeping our doors open and by just showing our faith in God. You know, like, I've never been scared of any illness because, you know, I know that when it's my time to go, I'll go regardless of, you know, whether I seek medical advice or not. And for us to just rely on the government rather than God, like, that's just been really disappointing.
It's a real test of human species mettle, isn't it, when all of a sudden the only people you can believe in are the government, and yet any other time in history, you ask the same people and they go, oh, I don't trust the government. And yet when this goes, oh, no, I have to trust the government. And yet every single time in this event, this three-year period is another case of sleight of hand that yet again, look that way and we're going to go this way and this is what you're going to do. So it's no end of real disappointment in the entire process to determine how it is that we get ourselves out of it. So I guess, as I alluded to before the break, the next question is, knowing what you know now or even what you knew then, if you were the Minister for Health 3 years ago, how would you have addressed the situation to educate the people of Australia?
I thought the way we would deal with it, and if I was a Minister for Health, well, I think I'd be in jail by now. But, in an ideal world, I thought that what they would do and what would make logical sense is to have pop-up, you know, infection control stations around and educate the public on good basic manners, you know, don't lick the shelves at Woolies and Coles and don't, you know, cough in someone's face. Just very simple etiquette like that, you know, proper hand hygiene, not just that splashing of alcohol rub on your hands and then, you know, wiping it on your butt and walking into the shops, you know, just real proper serious infection control measures. That's what I thought we would do, you know, educate the public. But it's not about educating the public. It's about keeping them in the dark, because if they don't know, then they'll be afraid. I think, you know, knowledge is always power. And if you understand how disease works and you understand how infections spread, you've got no reason to fear. But they didn't want that, did they? They wanted us to be afraid.
Well, the other thing that I couldn't understand was that during the early COVID period, was even on TV that we're all, you know, surgically stitched to during that process, there wasn't a single ad for any of the usual suspects in terms of immune boost. So there was no vitamin ads on TV. There was no olive leaf. There was no echinacea. Mm-hmm. There was none of this. It was blank. And yet the Prime Minister would get on TV and say, well, McDonald's is open, the bottle shop is open, and you can go to these major department stores for click and collect. It was like there was a complete separation between any form of logic before. And then it was reflected further when you got a diagnosis, you just went home for 2 weeks and they didn't even tell you to take, you know, Panadol or aspirin. There was nothing. So go home, wait 2 weeks. If you get sick enough, somehow you'll end up in a hospital on a ventilator. And that was COVID. It just was such an aberration, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like, for this incredibly deadly, serious disease, for there to be absolutely no treatment, not even just Panadol and ibuprofen and vitamin C and all of the rest that you usually get told to take, and pretty much only present to hospital when you're coughing up blood. I mean, there's no logic to it at all. Nothing makes sense. And I suppose, like, for those of us that are watching all of this, you feel like you're in an alternative universe, because they're coming out with the more and more outlandish suggestions. And unfortunately, a large part of the population believes it and falls for it.
Well, they certainly do. And I guess it's partly because the system has designed it that you don't ask questions, that the education system is stumbling. The idea of thinking for yourself is somewhere else. You look back and you think, well, what could we have? What could we have done differently? That's the first stage. The second stage of it is how do we not do it again? But how do we compare in reflection? Now, in your career, just by what you've told me today, it feels like that the carnage from the vaccine appears to have been probably the most drastic of all or of anything that you've seen in your career, not the virus, not any previous sicknesses, but the fallout from the jab is when the hospitals really started to get busy. Is that the worst thing you ever saw in your career?
Yeah, it is actually.
Wow.
To think that we as healthcare professionals did that to the population.
Yeah.
You know, and just watching them come in day by day and being completely oblivious to the fact that it was the vaccine and you know, they were told on TV, you know, it's safe and it's effective and it's going to stop hospitalization. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden our hospitals were overflowing. We were packed to the rafters, not with the usual flu season. We had very desperately sick people that were suffering life-altering disease, you know, strokes and all of that, which meant that they were in hospital for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. We were outsourcing them to private hospitals, and you know, everyone was just under the pump, and the fact that very few people acknowledged that we had done this to them. You know, if I had my time back, I think I would have stolen all the medical records and I would have gone on TV publicly. Because I did do an interview with Channel 7 and 9, but I hid my face. But if I had my time back, I'd just face the cameras. I wouldn't care. I just wish that I had somehow gathered more data and evidence before I left.
And you're not the only one to have. Yeah, yeah. And yet you've done more than most. And you're a voice for many, and there will be other nurses and other doctors that will stand up, and more are standing up every day. So you need to hold your head high in that regard and say, hey, I was one of the pioneers in this approach. And I hate that you have such sadness from all of this, but it's because you care and because you know that what they did was revolting and horrible and should never ever have happened, nor should ever happen again. The only way forward out of all of this is to continue doing the great work that you're doing and to be able to share these stories and be there for the fallout when it does come, because I tell you what, we are going to need a lot of help when this gets worse rather than better in terms of this fallout. And I don't know how many more jabs people are going to take before they realize that they're not helping. And if anything, that it's going to be a whole lot more trouble coming. In our last couple of minutes, Jana, where do you see, what do you think is the next thing that's going to happen in terms of breaking in our direction? Is it a wake up call, or is there something else coming here that's going to turn this back towards the people for once and the people win?
Well, unfortunately, I think that the number of adverse events is just on the rise. You just have to look at the headlines, and you know, they're saying that heart disease is now caused by gardening, and you know, Parkinson's is caused by lying on your back. So, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of very unwell young people out there, and they are going to start asking questions. And my hope and prayer is that there's enough healthcare workers out there that'll have the balls to just say, yep, the vaccine did this to you. Now let's get on with it and let's try and fix you. You know, we just need to get that message out there. We just need to get it out there. These aren't, you know, soil contaminations that's giving you a heart attack. It's the vax.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And so for most people who've got this far into the narrative and are still alive and perhaps still haven't taken the vaccine and are unafraid and strangely not getting sick in all of this. Well, at least we have a control group, don't we, that we can all sort of compare notes when this comes to fruition. I do wonder and question the 95.7% double jab statistic. I can't believe that could actually be real in this country. And yet, judging by the recent election results, it almost correlates. So it's quite frightening in all of that. But where there is life, there is hope. And when we can put one foot in front of the other, we continue to fight the battle. Jana, it's been a great delight to have you on the program today, and I thank you for all the work that you continue to do in the movement. What's the next thing that we need to pay attention to in our last 30 seconds here? What should we be doing?
I think we're probably going to have a polio and a monkeypox outbreak in Australia as well, so keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, there it is. The government is, as Ronald Reagan would say, it's not the solution, it's the problem. And the sooner we learn that, the better we can get on with the rest of our lives. Thank you again, Jana, for being on the show. Coming up next, Rick Munn is going to light it up from all the way across the Atlantic Ocean in the UK. This is TNT Radio.